This episode of Holobiont is about the tumor microbiome and inflammatory microenvironment. So we've historically placed cancer cells at the center of the tumor solar system, namely thinking that everything revolves around cancer cells. However, tumors are really complex assemblies containing, of course, cancer cells, but many other cell types, including cells from the vasculature, immune cells like macrophages, neutrophils, T cells, and even non-host cell types like bacteria. Now, whether tumors develop, regress, or metastasize isn't somehow written in the mutations in the genome of cancer cells only. It's the product of the interactions of all of these components. Matteo Massara, who is a postdoctoral researcher at the University of Lausanne in Switzerland, has been studying this immune environment of tumors, trying to make sense of the chaos of all these cell types, mediators of inflammation, and even bacterial taxa, and try to reduce all of this complexity to a tractable system that can be used to develop immunotherapies. So here's our conversation. Maybe can we start by you telling us a bit about who you are, what's your background, and why you became interested in what you're currently researching?
So nice to meet you. To everyone, I'm Matteo Massara. I'm Italian and I work at the University of Lausanne. And I started my scientific career during my master project in inflammation and cancer. And starting from this point, I started to explore a bit what was beyond inflammation, immune cell, and I discovered really a world. And I'm glad to be here today to speak with you about my knowledge, my research, and also exciting topics that are arising in these days.
Great. Yeah, so we can start by maybe defining what inflammation is in a cancer setting. So one paper that's been reviewed more, that's been very influential in the cancer field, is the idea of cancer hallmarks, which is conceptualized by Hanahan and Weinberg. And they've, so these were kind of centered around unrestrained proliferation, the fact that cancer cells can evade growth suppressors. But now there's been a focus on this aspect of tumor promoting inflammation and immune evasion. So can we take the time to define what is inflammation? Because as I said, it's kind of a black box term. Everyone stuffs in inflammation. But what do we mean by inflammation in a tumor setting?
So this is an excellent question. Starting from the definition, inflammation, that is the response of vascularized tissue to damage or an infective agent that is recruiting cells and molecules that are able to resolve, hopefully, this inflammation. We have the main find that inflammation is one of the cardinal of cancer. As you said, it is, as it was reported by this seminal review. In particular, inflammation is linked to cancer by two pathways that are called the extrinsic and the extrinsic pathway. In the extrinsic pathway, there is if there is a pre-existing inflammatory status in an organ, we have an higher probability to develop cancer. And on the other end, we have in this intrinsic pathway the formation of many mediators of inflammation and the recruitment, the activation of immune cells caused by oncogene. So both the ways are leading to an inflammatory status in tumor, and this status is broadly defined as a pro-tumoral. On the other end, also there are also some other mechanisms that are sustained by in the inflammation context that are anti-tumoral. So it's important every time to think about as a balance between what is the positive and negative regulation of the inflammation and its impact on cancer. And it's also very important to keep in mind for therapies that are targeting the inflammation.
And so if we focus on some of the key signaling molecules that are involved in inflammation, these are notably chemokines and cytokines. And you've done a lot of work on that. So could you tell us if maybe some of the examples of some of the roles where chemokines are involved in cancer and what properties make them good target for immunotherapies, if they are a good target for immunotherapies?
This is an excellent question. So when we think about inflammation, one of the key actors are the molecules that are governing this inflammation status. Cytokines are the most important, and inside the cytokines, we can find the chemokines because they were defined as the chemotractive cytokines. They are able to recruit and to activate immune cells to the site of the inflammation. Chemokines can be produced by both cancer cell and immune cell and also stromal cells. And also they have really a long list of factors, including the recruitment and activation of leukocytes and angiogenesis, metastasis, and cancer cell growth. So this is for sure a very important class of molecules that we want to target for therapy. Up to now, there are several clinical trials that are ongoing, and the most promising that is already in the clinic, in particular in Japan, is about the 6CR4 inhibitor that is used against acute and chronic leukemia. So starting from these small molecules that are one of the main actors of an inflammation, we can arrive to the bed of the patients with an effective treatment.
Mm-hmm. And that's good to hear, because a lot of the immunotherapy we hear about in cancer settings has been more with the adaptive immune system rather than the innate immune system. So listeners might have heard in recent years, there's been a lot of focus on like immune checkpoint inhibitor therapies, where essentially it's lifting the brakes of inhibition on CD8 T cells to recruit them to kill the tumor cells. And there's also been CAR T cell receptors, where an artificial receptor is inserted in the T cell to target cancer cells. But here we're talking about the innate immune system. So what do you think that targeting the innate immune system can yield as much benefits, and what maybe will be additional challenges as opposed to adaptive therapies?
When we are talking about adaptive immunity, for sure, we need to remember that adaptive immunity is activated by the innate immunity. So for sure, there are key pathways that we can take in account also to impact on adaptive immunity. About this topic, what is coming to my mind is the big dream to use macrophages as target, to target macrophages as a potential treatment for patients. So that are the prototypic cell for the innate immunity. On the other hand, if you think about innate immunity and immunotherapy, I'm thinking about some monoclonal antibodies that are used to cause the ADCC, the antibody-mediated cytotoxicity, the extended macrophages and NK cells. So for sure, innate immunity is a protagonist of immunotherapy as well as the adaptive immunity.
All right, because the effector functions we're mobilizing by the Fc portion of the antibody is essentially using the innate immune system already. So it's not like it's entirely novel to use the innate, right? Great. And then there's inflammation that we could say as damage associated or maybe intrinsic, but then inflammation can also be caused by obviously pathogens and of the microbiome. So that's another key interest that's been developing in the recent years, because, well, we all know that all tissues of the body have their specialized microbial niche that have a specific abundance and a specific composition of bacteria. And that's also the case of tumors, which have their own like profile of bacterial microbiome. Can you maybe tell us a bit about how this like research area developed? And yeah, like what's maybe the history around it?
So when we think about tumors, we have not to think only cancer cell, we need to think about the tumor microenvironment in a very broad way, starting from the cancer cell. Also, we can find some other cells, for example, leukocytes, vessels, other stromal cells. And also it was demonstrated last year that also bacteria are a part of this tumor microenvironment. It was really surprising with me. We don't know why there are bacteria in the tumor. If you think about that, in the tumor, there are many leukocytes that should, in theoretical way, protect us from bacteria. But you think about the strong immunosuppressive environment there is in the tumor, we can have the possibility to have the bacteria that are allowed to enter and to grow. And also we have also other topics that we can explore, because up to now it's not known. For example, the leakage of the vessel, and then also the hypoxia that is maybe helping bacteria to grow. The problem that up to now the knowledge in this field are very limited, as you mentioned, and also we don't know the function of this bacteria. We know they are there, but we don't know what they are doing. We know they are impacting in some way on the tumor growth, because the many projects and the results that are available up to now indicating the bacteria as in the organism, not in the tumor, but in the organism, as an important player in tumor growth and also in immunotherapy response. If you think about to move to the next step, the history of bacteria. Bacteria were noticed to be in the tumor quite a while ago. And also what is important that these bacteria can be used, were hypothesized to be used in some way to fight cancer. Two examples are coming to my mind up to now. The first one is the coli toxin, in which there is this preparation of inactivated bacteria coming from Streptococcus and Serratia, and is the first attempt to have immunotherapy, because in this way we have a strong response from the immune system against the cancer cell that is in fact driven by bacteria. And then also the second example that is coming to my mind is the BCG, the Bacillus Calminguerete, that it was developed in the end of the 19th century to prevent tuberculosis, but it was also found effective to cure bladder cancer, because the bacteria is able to bind to the cancer cell, and then also immune cell can be activated by this bacteria to recognize and destroy tumor cells.
Mm-hmm. I'm very fascinated with BCG, and you say this crosstalk is, because I think maybe it has changed, but in the US, BCG is actually only approved for bladder cancer, and not, they don't have the approval for TB. And I mean, BCG also has a lot of non-specific reduction of mortality. BCG is a fascinating example. But as you say, there are other examples of quite strong crosstalk between bacteria and cancer responses. And so one where there's quite a good documentation is gastric cancer, which is quite strongly linked to Helicobacter pylori infection. And in that case, the association is quite strong. But do you expect that in the rest of the cases, the influence of the microbiome will mostly be quite minor, just like when we have a specific genetic polymorphism, it only explains a minor percentage of disease? So these like constellation of small effects.
So, what I know that up to now only 11 bacterial strain are recognized as oncomicrobes. So they are able to cause cancer. And this is due mainly by genetic alteration that are mediated by toxin or reactive oxygen species. Only these 11 bacteria are able to cause about, there is an estimation of the 13% of the total cancer. So this is a huge quantity if you think about the whole cancer compartment. We need to think about that this is only bacteria that are recognized to be the cause. But we know that bacteria are also reported to be complice of the cancer cell to make the tumor grow, and then also to limit sometime the response to immunotherapy. This is a fantastic field to explore. I would say many ideas has to come, and then also many data we need to achieve to understand better this really intriguish relation between microbes and cancer.
Yeah, I mean, can we delve into the mechanisms a bit more? Because you mentioned genetic alterations. And so in the case of viruses, there has been some quite, there's a strong history of using viruses to understand the mechanisms of cancer transformation. And in viruses, there are some examples of direct effects. So for example, I think of HPV will integrate its DNA, its genome into the host DNA, and that drives the E6 and E7 proteins that disturb tumor suppressors, so P53RB, and that directly drives oncogenesis. But do we have such direct effects with bacteria, or is it each time with the immune system as a variable intervening to mediate the effect?
Yes, I just mentioned that there are 11 bacteria that are causing, that are reported to be the cause of cancer. And other than that, we have really a long list of bacteria that have this indirect system. Up to now, it's a bit difficult to extend this list, but it'll be extended, I would think, soon by exciting findings that are that will be published really in a soon.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, there's probably, these direct and indirect effects. So one of your interests is in brain tumors, which I find really interesting because we often think of the brain as an immune privileged site in that it's physically closed off from the circulation with a blood-brain barrier. And we typically think of it as being sterile, which I guess is even more interesting for to study the microbiome and the immune response. So maybe could we start off by saying, is it really abnormal to have bacteria in the brain? Is this only occur in the case of pathology?
So up to now, there is not a consensus about the presence of bacteria in a healthy brain. There are some rumors about, but still nothing demonstrated up to now. So we are really looking forward to discover something exciting and new. If you think about brain and bacteria, there are two data that are important to keep in mind. The first one, talking about tumor, that in a recent publication also in the glioblastoma, that is the most aggressive primary tumor, bacteria were found as a component of the tumor microenvironment. So something that was so isolated as the brain is not in the end. And also the second knowledge is coming from infection, in which is, I would say, unfortunately, possible to have infection in the brain that are causing encephalitis. So for sure, connection between bacteria and the brain is really an exciting talk. On that, I can also introduce another topic, that is the gut to brain axis, in which the bacteria in the gut can impact on the bacteria, on the brain biology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course, because bacteria don't have to be physically located in the brain to influence either neurological function or even brain tumors. So there's several pathways through which this can occur. Can we maybe go through them quickly? Be it the vagus nerve and through soluble compounds. So how can something in the gut influence brain function and inflammation?
So this gut-to-brain axis is composed by two pathways. The first one is connecting the gut to the brain. And as you mentioned, there are several metabolites or hormone-like peptides that are produced by the bacteria in the gut, and they are shed through the circulation. And also these metabolites or peptides can have a strong impact in barrier integrity, microglial activation, and immune cell trafficking. So for sure, the gut can be listed as a controller of the brain. The second way around is the control that the brain has to the gut and to the bacteria in the gut. And as you mentioned, it is exerted by the vagus nerve and also some hormones that are normally released for brain function. And this is impacting on the bacterial composition. So there is a back and forward communication between the gut and the brain. And for that, the gut is often named as a second brain because it can act also on behavior as it is demonstrated in mice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. So as we said, these short chain fatty acids, all these cytokines that could travel. I guess, yeah, I mean, obviously the blood-brain barrier is not totally impermeable. If something is hydrophobic, small, uncharged, it can get through. And then we could also, maybe there's cells that are like licensed in the gut and then could go on and exert their anti-tumor effects patrolling in the brain. And then, so the brain has its own kind of immune system in the form of microglia, which are like macrophages that are seeded there embryonically. Do they also have these long range interactions whereby the gut can influence their functions and then their roles in tumor?
Definitely, yes, because there are, for example, all these tryptophan metabolites that are sensed by bacteria and they are acting on this activation and also on this development. So for sure, bacteria have an impact also on what is the immune status of the brain.
And we're always talking about the gut microbiome. But what about like the nose microbiome, the mouth microbiome? These are obviously also like physically closer to the brain. And for example, with the olfactory system, there's direct links. So do we not study them just for historical reasons? Because that's not the field that was going to? Or is there a reason to believe that the gut has the strongest influence?
So if you think about the gut, we have the highest amount of bacteria. Mm-hmm. So for sure, it's easy to think about that can have a major impact on the brain biology. I would also remember a recent study from 2019 in which an oral bacteria is associated to Alzheimer's development. So not only gut bacteria, but also bacteria in other cells, for example, in our mouth, can have a prominent role in brain pathology, for example, Alzheimer's, that is really an important pathology to study.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's probably a lot to say, and we'd be drifting from the topic of tumors, but the evidence that, I think there's evidence, for example, that olfactory dysfunction will precede the motor symptoms of Parkinson's a lot earlier. And even that the protein misfolding could actually start from enteric neurons and then spread up. So there's probably with all these neurodegenerative conditions a lot to be studied. And I suppose that will also translate to cancers and tumors in some sense. I've also heard about a study where they sequence, or at least they're profiling bacterial taxa in the stools of patients, and this can predict responses to immune checkpoint therapy. I guess that means even if the bacteria aren't causally linked, they're acting as a reporter system, and we could use them also as predictive tools.
Yes, also there are. I need to remember also that there are some clinical trials that want to target really bacteria, for example with the fecal transfer, and up to now they have a promising outcomes. So I would say that also this bacteria can be used as target therapy as well as the immunotherapy that we were talking about before.
I mean, how do you envision that? Do you see it as like oral probiotics? Would that be enough? Or
this is a bit difficult to predict, because we need to think about that the microbiome is changing day by day, person by person. So there are several techniques that can be used for target our bacteria. the problem that I see to target in a stable way, also to have a stable change in the microenvironment for, I don't know, days, weeks, maybe years. So this is the main challenge that I see up to now in this field.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing with the microbiome field. It's just, there's just too many variables. And so what strikes me as this is also fundamentally an issue of dimensionality reduction and data processing. But in a way, it's not because the microbiome field is new that we haven't really faced these challenges before. Maybe we know how to do this analysis. We just need to have the insight to know it's to apply it to here. So for example, you've studied the tumor microbiome quite a lot, and you've studied the association of certain immune cell subsets, let's say neutrophils and gliomas. So if we use categories of bacterial species or OTUs, which are they're quite similar to species, they're essentially based on a certain percentage of sequence similarity, usually 97%. So yeah, if we treat these bacterial OTUs as immune cell subsets, we could be using the same analytical tools, I suppose. So maybe you already have the insights in the analysis, and it's just a question of repurposing it.
This is a really nice question, because we have several techniques that are coming from the microbiology to study bacteria, starting from the cultivation. And then also we have sequencing, we have imaging, we have mice in which we can target in effective way the microbiome. What I see a bit difficult up to now is to study the role of not a single bacteria, but the group of bacteria that are interacting among they to, and maybe they have a synergistic or an antagonistic response. So we need to think about not only the single bacteria, what is doing, but also the bacteria as a community, what they are doing. And also there's a community inside the big community of the bacteria that are in symbiosis with us. So this is not a problem of technique, but it's a problem of systemic biology, because as you said, there are many variables, and also the system is super complex. This is, in my opinion, the real challenge that there is up to now to be covered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, making sense of it. And also what strikes me is kind of the direction in which we look at it. So when we think about causality in the microbiome, sometimes we think there's this specific landscape of bacteria around this tumor. So this landscape must have shaped how the tumor is developing, but it could actually be the other way around, whereby a certain tumor microenvironment, be it because it's hypoxic or because it has overexpressing certain metabolites, is fit for certain bacteria to thrive. So the bacteria that are there are actually just best suited to this microenvironment. This is probably a chicken and egg problem, where it's a bit of both. But I suppose we could kind of like flip it and look at it the other way around, whereby it's the bacteria that are attracted to it, in a way.
Yeah, as you were replied, this is a bit both direction. What if we think about that is we need to be to study the role of this bacteria when we target them. So if you think about the therapy, how they are impacting on cancer, if they are doing their job because they are in some way skewed by the tumor microenvironment, or they are shaping the tumor microenvironment, it's very difficult to assess in an experimental way. We need to think about to know the precise role when we are thinking of to target when we are targeting for a cure. That is the most important part, because we are altering what is the normal equilibrium, and we need to know where to go in order to have an effective and also a long-term treatment.
Mm-hmm. Are there appropriate animal challenge models to test precisely this causality? Is that kind of one of the bottlenecks in your research, or more generally the research of the field right now?
So I see the problem about general cancer study and inflammation about variables, as we talked about before. So there are many variables, for example, diet, age, microbiomes. So all is not important to study. So other than important to study BIME-1, this course is important to have a bigger view to know how is the broad picture about what is going on the inflammatory system and its impact on cancer. Because when if you think about it, patients, they are not in alarm, they are going around, eating a restaurant, and also taking a cold. So it's really a very difficult and challenging perspective to think about the inflammation. We talk about inflammation in cancer, we talk about the relation about bacteria and immune cells, but there are so many variables that we need to take in account to study what is the impact of the environment to the immune system, and also that is reflecting on tumor. So for I see in this difficult link between all these variables really a challenge for the researcher in the present but also in the future.
Mm-hmm. But I suppose then what direction should we take? So if we're trying to eliminate some of the variables, maybe we should be scaling down a system and instead of using mice, try to like streamline simpler experimental systems like C. elegans, or because if we do that, maybe we could factor out some of the variables like diet. And if we do these little modules of smaller systems, maybe that's how we could then like reconstruct the picture.
This is an excellent way to break down the problem in small parts. And it is working up to now because animal models and also in vitro models help us so much to understand which are the main function of the immune system in an organism. For sure, the next step will be to start from the small to go to the big picture. And it will be the challenge for the next generation of scientists.
Mm-hmm. Do you think there's a specific technique or approach that could provide the biggest push to the fields, I guess?
Oh, this is a very difficult question. I would say as an integration of techniques. So the same sample that will be analyzed by different techniques to have a more comprehensive view about what is going on. What is going in the field. I cannot exclude that in the future there will be some algorithm that can integrate all this information in an easy and fast way to have really a multidimensional data that is describing in an exhaustive way what is happening in a biological system. So this is a good question. So up to now, the majority of people are focusing on bacteria because they have a prominent role and also they are quite easy to study. The future will be to study also the other component with an higher attention. For example, as you mentioned, viruses and fungi. For sure, I would say I will be not surprised to add to the list of the tumor microenvironment actors also other players that are not bacteria. So really we are open to looking forward to have new data from this really exciting, really important field.
That's great. So if people want to find out more about like your ongoing project or your research in general, where would you suggest they go to?
So I would say, for sure, the publication are the main output for a scientist. And also there is, I have a Twitter account, I think, as the majority of people have. And then also through the website of my lab and so on. So we try to make our finding more open, available as possible. And also we encourage people to be in touch with us to discover more about our research.
Well, thank you so much for your time. This was great.
Thank you so much for the invitation. Thanks to the people that are listening to us.